This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters. I'm Chris Fitch. Today, we continue our Vulnerability Voices series in partnership with Three Hands Insight, the organization connecting businesses with lived experience to build better outcomes. And in this episode, we're joined by Lindsay and Sage as they discuss a topic that's rarely talked about, how a criminal conviction can impact a person's interaction with essential services, how the invisible cloud of stigma of a conviction can hang over you as a customer, and how a simple banking error on the day of release can trigger an immediate financial crisis. Guiding us, as ever, in the Vulnerability Voices series is Michael Hilton from Three Hands Insights, as he explores what it really takes for a service to support rehabilitation rather than block it. So over to Michael, Lindsay, and Sage.
Are you looking to strengthen your approach to vulnerability and consumer duty? Join the award-winning Vulnerability Academy, delivered by the Money Advice Trust in partnership with UK Finance. Over 200 professionals have already graduated, and Cohort 15 starts on 14th of April. Don't miss out. Sign up now at moneyadvicetrust.org/academy or click the link in the description.
So, we are here today to talk about the impact that having a previous conviction can have on a person's life, and particularly their interactions with businesses. I'm joined by Lindsay and Sage to share some of their experiences with us. Thank you both so much for being here with me. Let's start by understanding a little bit about both of your circumstances. Maybe Lindsay, could you give us just a little bit of context about the time you spent in custody, when that was, and I guess anything else you just want to share?
Of course. Thank you, Michael. So my name's Lindsay. I'll just give you a little bit of background about myself. About 5.5-6 years ago, I began misusing substances. And unfortunately, that led me to being involved in criminal activity and offending behaviour. This resulted in me spending 2 years on remand and then the best part of a year spent in prison. I now remain on licence until July next year. So I was released from prison last September under the new government's early release scheme. So it's a bit of a shock. I was getting out a little bit earlier, and I then had to spend 4 months on home detention curfew. So when I first was put in a custodial setting, quite early on, I began engaging with drug and alcohol services. And I'm really happy to say that I'm now almost 2 years completely abstinent. I now use my lived experience as an ambassador for Forward Trust, and I volunteer within the charity's housing service. And I like to get involved in this kind of talk about how having a conviction and having a past like I do has an impact on my life now.
Thank you very much, Lindsay, and lots more to come on those experiences. But before we go there, I guess the same question to you, Sage. Just be good to have a little bit of context of your circumstances, please.
So for the viewers listening, my name's Sage. Let me just tell you a brief story of how this all even happened. A few years ago, I ended up hanging around the wrong people, which led me down the wrong path in life. And that's what really showed me that the people you hang around can literally dictate where you're going to be in the future. And I didn't realize that at one point in time. And that mistake cost me 4 years of my life. But upon those 4 years, there was a lot of time to have time to think and reflect. And I've been released from prison about 2.5 years now. It's been slow and steady. But one thing I can say is that I've 100% secured my freedom and I've done a full 360. I no longer partake in what I used to do. And I'm now becoming who I'm supposed to be.
Thank you. And I mean, I could ask you about that part of your experience all day, but I won't, because what we want to focus in on is so what does it mean for your finances and your interaction with businesses? And I think let's think first about when you're in custody and you're looking towards that release and getting out and trying to set yourself up essentially for the best possible start, get your finances in order for when you're released. Lindsay, were you able to kind of put those things in place to prepare for life after prison in the way that you wanted?
Yeah, Yeah, so I'll just talk a little bit about my experience with accessing banking, both whilst in custody and then since I've been released. So fortunately for me, Michael, when I went into prison, I did have an active bank account, but it was about £500 overdrawn and my bank card had been suspended. There'd been bits and pieces of fraudulent activity on my account. I'm ashamed to say I was aware of it, but the account was still an active account. So when I got taken into prison, I was able to make a phone call to them to let them know where I was, and to make sure that if there was any other further activity on the account, obviously it wasn't anything to do with me. So I did notify the bank and they said that the account would remain open until I could sort it out upon release. So in the time coming up to the release, there's quite, for me personally, in a women's prison, quite a lot of involvement in getting you ready to prepare to start looking for work. So there was a course that we did called the Work Ready course. So that this was working with a work coach, and as part of that course, we were asked if we had bank accounts. I told the lady, you know, everything that had gone on with my bank account, and it was suggested to me that I should open a completely new bank account, fresh account, seeing as I turned over a new leaf and I was starting all new. However, she did tell me that it was actually going to be with the same banking provider that I was already with. So filled out an application form for a brand new basic bank account. I did also put on there that I had an existing account and it was overdrawn. Very open and transparent on that application. So a few weeks after that, I received a letter saying I'd been accepted for a new bank account, and that upon release, I was to go into branch with my ID and this letter, and I would have access to a new account. This kind of filled me with fresh hope that I was getting out of that cycle of having, let's face it, a dodgy bank account, and that I could start completely afresh. This didn't happen, however. What had happened is the two accounts had simply been merged. So what actually happened, and this was on my first day of release, I'd been to the job centre to get my universal credit payment set up, and they very kindly pushed through with same day payment. I mean, I had my release grant, but other than that, I had access to no other money. Went back up to branch to access it, to be told that the new account had completely swallowed the universal credit payment. This is like minutes before closing time, nothing they could do. So how that affected me, it left me with no access to funds, and it really did leave me in financial crisis on that first day being released from prison. The process of opening up the new account, it didn't feel to me that it was transparent. You know, I'd given them all of the details about the old account. I'd been asked if I wanted a new card for the old account, all of which I declined. I was very clear that it needed to be a new basic bank account. I wasn't looking for overdrafts, anything like that. So the whole process didn't feel clear and transparent, and that culminated in me being left in financial difficulty.
Thank you, Lindsay. And the contrast between, as you say, that where you felt what you were hoping for 4 months out, and then the reality at the end of your first day kind of on release is so stark.
I'll just add into that, when I actually went into branch, I didn't get a fantastic response, if I'm entirely honest. Obviously I was feeling a bit vulnerable, you know. I'd come out, I was living in a recovery house, I didn't know the area. I needed support when I went into branch. To be honest, I felt a bit of a freak show. When I produced this letter, which obviously had the prison address on it, the woman called over two other staff members, and they were almost grilling me, wanting to know what I'd been inside for, how long I'd been in. And it, on top of the shame and guilt that I already felt, it didn't feel good.
Sage, I can see you nodding along to perhaps this. I mean, what was your experience from within custody, trying to sort of set things up? Was it easy? Was there a system?
I'll be honest, there isn't really a system in place. It's more of, from my personal experience, it was more of a, if you know, you know. And I don't believe that's how it should be. And for one, touching on what Lindsay was saying, like, you can, if you do know the right information, you can open up a bank account, but it shouldn't be like that. But once you do now do open a bank account, for one, the banks, they have a contract with the prisons to say that, cool, we're going to allow you to open these bank accounts. So why now are they, why are the people opening bank accounts, e.g. the ex-prisoners, ex-cons, whatever society wants to label them, why are they being looked at as someone different opposed to a normal person on the outside just opening a bank account?
I entirely agree with you there, Serge and Tyler.
That's so wrong. In my personal experience, I had to conversate with other prisoners that had insider knowledge of how the prison worked and stuff, and I had to just talk to like the nice officers to get me onto education so that I could go into the one room that was in the education place. But it was hard work, and none of this gets told to you, and you're supposed to find out all about this in the last 12 weeks. And sometimes there's people, I met one guy, he served 20 years inside prison. He didn't know that you was able to get benefits from prison. You could get a bank account, driving license. He didn't know about all of these services. And for a bank specifically to not do their due diligence to make sure that their service is being ran correctly on the inside, that just shows that if that's not being done right, then how do you even expect people to say that they've been rehabilitated? So it's very hard, and it shouldn't be like that. So if I had one message for banks specifically, like, please do your due diligence for prisons and make sure that your service is being run correctly and you have the right people behind it enforcing the right information, because it shouldn't be a thing where if you know, you know. This information should be readily available for everyone.
And I guess the end result for both of you is, or for a lot of people, is that actually when you come out of prison on those kind of crucial early days, the basics around a bank account and being able to get your benefit payment is not there. So people are on the back foot in those first steps, essentially, on release. And so that's the challenge, I guess, of setting things up right for those crucial early days. I mean, more broadly, maybe come to you on this stage. What have been your experiences of engaging with businesses, engaging with financial services, or just society in general, with you know, knowing that you have this conviction? Has it mattered? Has it been a big factor in the couple of years?
And I'll be honest, within those 2 years that I've been released, it's been shambles in terms of just the 9-to-5. Just basically being in that flow because of my previous past. It's crazy that I've done my time, I've served my time, but it's like everything's not blown over. It's like I'm still carrying all of this past stuff into my future. If society doesn't provide you these opportunities, and if opportunities and the doors are being closed to you, what other options do people have? And that shouldn't be an option at all, because when I was in prison, we're all strict to basics, but I have met people that are very good engineers, personal trainers, chefs, all kind of talents. And if society was to put a light on these people inside, I believe that could create a whole new workload of people. I believe that if prison changed the way the education system is, for example, now, like I said, there's loads of people with these talents. But if there was a way that they could be taught how to monetize these talents, that would be a game changer, especially now we're entering like a digital age. Like, I'll be honest, I was in there for 4 years. The maths and English classrooms, they're teaching you stuff in like year six, year seven. It's disrespectful.
And I feel, Sage, like this resonates on a number of levels. For the people listening, you're talking about you as a customer and needing access to the services and this being a barrier to that. You're talking about you as a potential, very talented employee of these businesses. And then you're also, you know, talking about, well, these businesses have, you know, financial resources and things that can help people understand that world. So on multiple levels, there's sort of ways that support's needed. By people in those circumstances, and it's more barriers than access at the moment. I remember you, Sage, you used the term when we talked before about feeling like a non-player character in the world since you've come out, and I just thought that was so powerful.
Exactly. Just to reiterate my words, I literally said that I literally feel like an NPC. I literally feel like in society, I'm being overlooked and overshadowed because of this invisible cloud above myself that says he was in prison for 4 years. He's a black sheep. But in actual fact, in most cases, I walk into a room and I'm the light.
Lindsay.
Yeah, Sage, you just said a really beautiful thing there when you said sometimes you are actually the light that walks into a room. And I got to entirely agree. I think sometimes, and more often than not, we hear a lot of the things that have gone wrong post prison. You know, we hear of people that have relapsed. We hear of people that have been recalled to prison. I don't always feel that we're hearing these success stories, these people that are doing good, because that we you know, a lot of us have got it in us and we're striving every day. But once again, you wear with words is beautiful, Sage. Cloud hanging over your head. It is the stigma associated with being in prison and having a conviction. It's a very real thing. It's a very real thing that I live with. Even though I'm doing really well now, it's something that's there. I'm not saying just because I'm a woman, but I think as a woman and as a mother, I think there's another small part of it there as well, that it's like a kick in the gut sometimes. Somebody finds out you've been in prison and then they find out you're a mother, and you can see the questions whirring in the mind, and it's something that I have to live with daily. Now, I feel fortunate in that I do have a pretty thick skin and I can take it and it doesn't affect my recovery or affect the way that I live my life today. But it's still very real. There's misconceptions about the type of person that I must be. I can have a conversation with somebody before they know that I've been in prison, an intelligent conversation, and I have felt, not with everybody, obviously, but I have felt people's reactions change towards me once I then drop it in that actually I've got a conviction. It's quite palpable. You can feel it. Not with everybody, but it's there. I'm not ashamed to talk about it. It's part of my past, but I am more than my past. And I think you touched on it, Sage. It's about organisations, be it banking, be it utilities, in that accepting that this does not define us. Having a conviction or having spent time in prison or in addiction, it does not define us. There's a lot more to us and we have a lot more to give. And it's almost like I'm having to shout it and scream it, like, look at me, look what I can do, look what I've got to say. There's a lot more than just that conviction or just that time spent in prison.
And you both articulate it so powerfully. Maybe one final question for you both then, and I'll come to you first, Sage. But you know, we've got people in business, all kinds of different businesses on the line. They're listening to you. They can't not have been struck by how powerfully you speak about your experiences. What's your message to them, for you and others with previous convictions? What do you need from them to do differently?
What I need from them is for them to open the door opportunity to people that society closes the door to. Be the one that allows people to have access to opportunity and change. Be the one that can open the door to success for someone. That can literally be the difference between someone going down the right path and the wrong path. You can literally be the barrier to entry into creating a whole new life for this person. Just don't close the doors of opportunity to people with good intentions, because a conviction doesn't mean they're a bad person. It just means they've just done some mistakes in their life.
Same question to you, Lindsay.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you've just said, Sage, there. I think I've already touched on this quite a bit on my last comments, in that I am more than what this last 6 months, not now, I'm very stable and happy now. I've had 6 years of trauma that's included domestic violence, being in prison, addiction, and now happily in recovery. That is 6 years of my life. Prior to that, I had two very successful careers. I had my own home, my own car. I was involved in charity work. There's a lot more to me. On paper, we could look like really quite awful people. The reality is very, very different. Taking that time out to know your customers.
Thank you both so much. I mean, you both have a way of describing, you know, what have been challenging, difficult circumstances, but in such an articulate, honest, direct, positive way about the potential and the change and the opportunity. This is an issue that is not talked about enough, despite the fact that millions of people in the UK have previous convictions. Thank you for shining a light on it.
And that's it for today's episode. A massive thanks to Lindsay and Sage for their openness, and to Michael Hilton and Three Hands Insight for leading the way. As a reminder, this series isn't sponsored by Three Hands Insight, but it's just us working together to help firms better understand the real-world impact of our processes. So if it was useful, please do download the podcast, share it with colleagues, put it on your intranet, and tell the world. And we'll have more Vulnerability Voices episodes coming up in the next couple of months. And that's about it. So until next time, keep it experienced, keep it thoughtful, and keep on remembering that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was brought to you by the Money Advice Trust. It was presented by Chris Fitch and produced by Phil King.